From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
With more hacking allegations being leveled against Russia, the question of Russian interference in the U.S. election continues to get life in the U.S. media. Margaret Kimberly, who has a weekly column at BlackAgendaReport.com under the byline Freedom Rider, points out that it's the U.S., in fact, who has interfered in Russian elections, particularly the 1996 Russian election.
In 1996, then Russian President Boris Yeltsin was running for re-election, and it looked like he was going to lose. The collapse of the Soviet Union had created a terrible economic crisis. The oligarchs were in charge. Yeltsin's friends, they were taking money from the treasury. The Russian energy reserves were up for grabs, and people were getting very rich. There were some government workers who went months without getting paid, however. Doctors weren't being paid. There was a terrible decline in life expectancy and in the birth rate that Russia's just beginning to recover from. This was a disaster. And Vladimir Putin says that the collapse of the Soviet Union was a catastrophe, he is being quite accurate. It was. So that year, 96, polls showed Yeltsin losing to a Communist Party candidate. His name was Gennady Zhiganov. And what happened is that a group of American political consultants allied with Dick Morris, who was one of the people who got Bill Clinton elected president.
That's right.
They went to Moscow secretly and worked with Yeltsin to improve his image. They did focus group marketing, all the things that these people do here in the United States, new advertising, all sorts of things. Yes, and they won. And Yeltsin won. Their existence was kept a secret from Russians, and they did not keep what they did a secret here. There was, among other things, a Time magazine cover story, which we have up on the Black Agenda Report site, and it says "Yanks to the rescue."
That's right.
And it shows Yeltsin waving a little American flag, and some years, or the early 2000s, there was a movie, I believe it was an HBO movie called Spinning Boris, which tells the same story. So this is not a secret. The people who did this all went on record to talk about how they undermined Russia's system, kept their manipulation secret from the Russian people who were the targets, and got Yeltsin in office, who is also paradoxically Vladimir Putin's mentor. So all this Putin hatred, well, you can blame Bill Clinton, I suppose, for keeping Yeltsin in office and eventually, when he was in ill health, resigning in favor of Putin, who we're now told is Satan incarnate. So that is the story, a well-known story, but the corporate media don't talk about it now. Any evidence of Russian interference in the 2016 election is very flimsy. We know that someone hacked, or perhaps an insider leaked emails from the Democratic National Committee to WikiLeaks. We know someone did that, but we don't know who. We're told that there are Russian digital fingerprints and someone calling himself Fancy Bear or something. I don't know why a Russian who wanted to keep secret would use the word bear in a name. But at any rate, that's what we're being told. So what we just have is a constant repetition by the media. And Democrats have seized on this. It does two things. It continues the war against Russia, war by other means, and it gets Democrats off the hook. And they distract people and who, instead of confronting them, about their electoral failures, which culminated finally in the loss of the presidency, that they will focus on Vladimir Putin instead of asking hard questions of the Democratic Party. But nobody talks about how the United States has done this in Russia and other places.
The condition of the people in Russia was really, really bad. There was manipulation of the economy and intrinsic problems, but a whole lot of external pressure too. It collapsed the economy in essence, and then, as you mentioned, it was parceled off to a few people who became fabulously well-to-do, and everyone else was sort of staggering around in the darkness with no hope and no options. Mm-hmm. And that was a very successful hunting ground for the Communist Party. And Zhuganov was polling ahead of Yeltsin, and it was clear to everyone why. The narrative, if you remember, the collapse of the Soviet Union was the end of history. Marxism was discredited forever. Socialism and communism, a thing of the past and all of that. The communists winning an election, in 8 years or 7 years, five years after the decline, mm-hmm. fall of the Soviet Union at that point in 96, would really not work with the narrative that was being spun. And the Clinton administration had the IMF send $10 billion in to sort of bolster up the government before the election, among the other things you described.
Yes, and that, some of that money was stolen, big surprise. Right. But yes, the United States went all out to make sure that Russia did not become socialist again. And it's only through American conniving that came to pass. The United States has a very long and ignoble history of doing the same thing all over the world. I learned that after World War II in Italy, the United States made sure that the Communist Party was very popular in the late 40s. They made sure that the communists didn't win there. If people do elect somebody the United States doesn't like, as in Chile, then they help a coup and kill the president, Allende, or snatch the president of Haiti, Aristide, and send him out of the country. So there are numerous examples all over the Americas, Honduras, Guatemala, all over Africa, Ghana, they got rid of Nkrumah. All over the world, the U.S. and its friends make sure that only the people they want stay in power. And they may manipulate an election, they may help overthrow someone, they do all kinds of things. So a lot of this whining about Russian hand-wringing should be in some sort of context. And there are people who argue, even if it is true that Russia played some role in helping Trump, that it's no more than what America deserves. And why is it so terrible for Americans to have their electoral will thwarted when the United States government has done that so often throughout the world? So, but I argue that there is no proof of this, and this constant Russia bashing is helping some very powerful people get what they want, and it's being used to neutralize the Trump administration, Trump's foreign policy. So it's looking more and more like Obama's. It doesn't look very different, although there are people who say, anyone who hoped otherwise was being naive in the first place. But I think the targeting of people who talk to the Russian ambassador, which is perfectly legitimate thing to do, the way that they have been targeted makes it unlikely that there would be any real change in the U.S.-Russia relationship, which is very unfortunate.
And one of the political weapons that they're using here, they paint this picture of the Russians stealing the election. Part and parcel of that is that they stole it from Hillary Clinton and handed it to Donald Trump, and that therefore Trump is a Russian tool. But as you put it in the article, one of the conspirators said, quote, everyone realized that if the communists knew about this, that means the U.S. intervention, before the election, they would attack Yeltsin as an American tool, closed quote. And you write, of course, Yeltsin was an American tool, precisely the desired outcome.
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, the secretive nature of this from being kept from the Russians is, you know, is really terrible that people didn't, you know, we talk a lot now. There's I think his name is Mercer, a billionaire who helped Trump, and people said he was manipulating. Well, it's called advertising. It's called political marketing. It's nothing more than has been done in the past. But why was it okay for Americans to do that in Russia and keep their existence a secret? So if what they were doing, if there was nothing wrong with it, why weren't they open about it? Why didn't they say that Putin had help? But of course, it's obvious, as the quote you just mentioned says, people would have been very angry. And so here we are, awash in this. It's almost surreal, this new McCarthyism. There's going to be a House committee to investigate Russian influence in the election or of Trump. And the Democrats have already said that they won't, and that's going to be behind closed doors, so we won't even know what sort of evidence is being presented. And the Democrats have already said they won't cooperate unless, and it's not clear to me what they mean, unless the Republicans are going to have a thorough investigation. So they're already using it for political ends. So this is harkens back to the days of the House Un-American Activities Committee. But here we are in the 21st century, and liberals are cheering McCarthyism. Trump doesn't help matters any when he, you know, claimed that Obama tapped his phone. I am sure he and his team were under surveillance of some kind. It's obvious
for sure
that they were. But I'm sure Obama did not tap Trump's phone.
Well, I don't think he crawled in on his hands and knees with a wire like cat in
The
Mission Impossible.
Name on it saying, a presidential order. Let's tap Trump's phone. So it would be something that would be difficult to prove, and of course that sort of thing, that misspeaking or whatever you want to call it, however you want to describe it, is going to be used against Trump.
Yeah. It's he's an interesting character just in terms of linguistics. You know, he's like a rich kid that tries to talk street talk or something, and like he almost gets it, but it's shifted slightly out of phase, and it makes you scratch your head like, what the hell is he talking about?
yeah, and it's used against him. And
yeah,
he, you know, and I think we discussed this a couple of weeks ago, that weakness makes him and his team an easy target, and the people around him are, he didn't get insiders. I mean, he was the outsider
right,
in the
right.
campaign among the Republicans
right.
and against Hillary Clinton. And so he does not have the benefit of having experienced insiders to help with this sort of thing. And that only makes it look worse. And then, of course, the media never lets up, and I'm told it's the sort of thing I couldn't stomach and stand to watch. A couple of nights ago on CNN, Fareed Zakaria had some special on about
Putin.
You know, Putin being the most powerful man in the world,
yeah,
and the most
right.
evil man in the world,
yeah.
or the most evil powerful
yeah.
man in the world, and this just goes on and on and on.
It was almost, I was waiting for him to bust out, fearless leader.
yes, something along those lines. And there's no counter argument.
At all.
There's no counter presentation. There's no attempt for a balance. They don't, there are many people that they could interview who could disagree, but they are not allowed on the air. I mean, I'm just going to be quite obvious. There were
right.
people who are experts on Russia,
Stephen
who've
Cohen,
been on television
example.
For
yep.
years.
Yep.
And now they're just called Putin. If they don't go along with this line, they're called Putin apologists.
Right.
And and that's it.
Mm-hmm. You know, this all, of course, we're seeing something play out among the elite in the West generally. And A lot of people on the left are, you know, pointing to it as a rise of fascism, like it just got conjured up out of thin air or something, or out of misery, and but it's just started cooking. It hasn't been, you know, implemented for the last 70 years or so. And but it there's like an apparent break inside the elite over questions that have to do with globalism and other models, including hegemony on the one side and multipolarity on the other. The reality of multipolarity is forcing some sort of a reckoning with it. And the two models are, one is to smother it in its crib, which is what Clinton's faction, the one she represented in the election campaign, that seems to be their impulse. They targeted Russia, which is, as you point out, you know, from Europe to Asia, this massive resource location, gas and oil reserves. Those make it a target. And in addition, it's a twofer. Russia is actually able to stand up to U.S. imperialism in substantial ways because of its nuclear arsenal and the relative independence of its economy from the global system. And so this push is really a push towards, you know, stealing the resources of Russia, which means war, real war.
Yes. And we have things like there's a Republican Senator, Lindsey Graham. He and John McCain are in lockstep on this. Yeah. And Graham says this is a year to kick Russia's ass, nice. Which is just crazy.
Yep.
And nonsensical. But Russia being a nuclear power makes it it cannot be taken lightly.
Right.
After Ukraine, after the U.S. instigated a coup in Ukraine and Russia reacted by annexing Crimea, Russia was subjected to sanctions from the U.S. and European nations. But the Prime Minister Medvedev said some days ago that Russia doesn't have any expectation of doing any large-scale trade with the West any longer. I think he used the word a divorce. And they're getting closer and closer to China and Iran and the new Silk Road, which is quite fascinating to me. But this news blackout on Russia tells you nothing about it. And this is something that people need to know about instead of constantly being told that Vladimir Putin is a demon. So they're going on about their business. They are strengthening other alliances in response to what the United States has done. So they are preparing for they're being waged a kind of war against them, and they're preparing, they're defending themselves. So this is all, it could be ridiculous and it could be dangerous that these constant provocations could result in a hot war, or it could just go on and on with the United States trying to thwart Russia's actions around the world. Russia is still in Syria. Trump has sent several hundred U.S. troops to Syria, which will only make matters worse. So his talk of not intervening, you know, it appears to have been just talk.
But
the Russians are trying to help one faction in Libya. So they have troops in Western Egypt, so which is a good thing. It's a good thing for someone else, another force in the world, to be able to stand up to the United States. And Russia deserves to help Libya because they and China would not veto the no-fly zone resolution in the UN Security Council in 2011 that led to the destruction of Libya. So they owe it to Libya to try to do something right now.
Which I think they recognize, too. I mean,
I'm sure they regretted that immediately. I'm sure they were lied to.
Well, the resolution had nothing to do with what was done. They didn't know that by enabling a no-fly zone, they thought they were being judicious and cautious while it was investigated, but in fact, the U.S. used that as an excuse to bomb Libya from March through October 20th.
Exactly.
Daily.
And so I'm sure they realized their mistake. They have not fallen for that again since. But I think it's so unfortunate that Americans are not told anything they should be told, that nobody mentions that our government openly intervened in the Russian people's choice in 1996. That if you said New Silk Road to most Americans, they wouldn't know what you were talking about. Yeah, but if you talked about a golden shower in a Moscow hotel, they'd know what that meant. Or, you know, all of these assertions about Russian influence with Trump or against the Democrats or anything else. And it's really unfortunate, and frankly, it could be dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, we had Senator Jeanne Shaheen, a Democrat from New Hampshire, who's been, you know, for a year or two or three now on the issue of Russian propaganda kills, that's her claim, calling for hearings to look at the funding of RT and, you know, things like that. And you know, this whole climate is getting, you know, hyped and also starting to baseline to what was done in the 40s and 50s. You know, you talk about Russia and China partnership, the New Silk Road. I mean, the rise of the Eurasian economy and the Eurasian zone is the potential of that. More than half of humanity lives there. Tremendous resources, the largest manufacturing capacity, if you assemble China, Russia, and India in the world, and growing very rapidly. If you have a hegemonic bent, that has to be crushed. And the array of forces, you have China and Russia with Russia's strategic military capabilities. You talk about troops being in Libya, for example. One of the things, if you look at a map at the placement of forces, Russia now has some forces in the rear of NATO forces in the Middle East, both in Syria and in Libya, or in Egypt. And so there's the stage is being set for a war in front of us, and none of this is really discussed in the American media at all.
No, it isn't. They just go along with the narrative, and in effect make the case for war too, and have become nothing but war propagandists. And if you told the average American anything, we've been discussing for the past 25 minutes, they would call us liars or say we were crazy just because they've never heard this before. And just getting this steady diet of Russia is responsible. And so who funds RT? Well, who funds the BBC?
Yeah,
the British government. Who funds the CBC? The Canadian government.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Why does it? It's none of our business who funds RT.
It's a news outlet.
If you don't like it, don't watch it. But
I'd like to know who funds. For example, I raised the question. I'd like to see Rachel Maddow's tax returns. I'd like to know who pays her. I mean, she's on the air. Okay, they carry her on NBC, so she gets broadcast over the public airwaves, and she gets carried over cable. The cable strung over our public streets. I have a stake in knowing that as well. And, of course, I can't find that out. You'd have to look through 300 corporations to figure out who owns the stock and then, you know, understand the politics on the boards and everything else to know who's really making policy there.
Yeah, well, it's MSNBC, so it's
and Microsoft.
What's his name? Gates. It's NBC is NBC Universal. It's part of a huge international conglomerate. So and why should they be the people that we get our news from? It's one of the problems in this country that the biggest outlets are all corporate. That's why I say corporate media instead of mainstream media, because that explains their orientation. You know, the Washington Post is owned by the guy who owns Amazon. He's the sole owner of the Washington Post.
Right.
And this is who's giving us our news. Let's investigate who gives us our news instead of worrying about who gives us the news in Russia. They always start with state-run media, state-sponsored media. And, well, we have state-sponsored media. The New York Times may be privately owned, but they take their marching orders straight from the government. They still, I have the feeling they're still following whatever Barack Obama says, even though there's a new president. But they are presenting basically their hacks for the Democratic Party. And and not telling us the truth. So they haven't even told us the truth about the election. They have not told us how Hillary Clinton and the Democrats messed up. Donald Trump doesn't have to be president. They haven't told us about the continued defeats of Democrats across the country. No analysis of that. Just anti-Trumpism, which isn't hard to do, and Vladimir Putin. So they don't serve the interests of the public at all in their reporting about this.
Right. And, you know, on the question of what's, you know, the U.S. troop deployment to Syria being an indication of Trump's relating to his promise about intervention, I think you have two questions that have to be answered before you get to that. First is, you know, how much in control of that particular deployment is Trump? Because there are questions about how much control he has over which parts of the government at the moment. Mm-hmm. And then which side, if Trump sent them or whomever, which side are they really there? You know, before the U.S. Air Force essentially was acting as the Air Force for and whatever U.S. advisors, quote unquote, were on the ground, they were clearing the way and directing the, you know, the drive of ISIS. They were putting ISIS up against the Syrian government and saying, okay, you can't go there, but you can go there, you know, go capture more territory or whatever. That has changed. In Yemen, we saw that already. Rather than have AWACS help the Saudis to bomb the Yemeni people, the U.S. went in and bombed the hell out of Al-Qaeda, who the Saudis were providing air cover for, and the U.S. were providing air cover for. So I'm wondering if, you know, you've got this hegemonic impulse towards, and it's really directed at Eurasia, which is the rising, you know, other major pole, and perhaps some that are want to engage realistically, to say, look, this is inevitable. Let's make money with these people. And there's a lot of developing to do. There's a lot of money to be made. And we are in a very strong position sitting at the table. We have the largest financial reserves. We have tremendous latent productive capacity. We have the largest military in the world, blah, blah, blah. Let's engage. And I'm wondering if Trump isn't representing that group. And therefore, the only thing standing between, you know, the U.S. and Russia at war. And how do we relate to him if that's the case?
Yeah, we just don't know. I mean, all we know is that troops are there, which is not a good sign. I think it's difficult for the U.S. to just disengage. I think there are so many forces fighting against it. But I'm going to assume that if they're there, the president has approved it. We'll see what the role and their goal is going to be. It would be interesting to if Trump were being given a free hand in foreign policy the way presidents usually are. It would be interesting to see what would happen. But now that's all a hypothetical because we know that's not the case. So the Secretary of State, Mr. Tillerson, has not been very vocal. But as some point out, that's how it should be done. He, you know, should not be making always making public pronouncements about what he's American foreign policy is going to be. So we're going to see, but I think it's difficult for America to change, and it's not clear how much Trump wanted it to change. We still have this military budget that is too large, and he's calling for a 10% increase. No. But interestingly enough, Democrats aren't attacking him about that.
That's
either.
Right. No, of course not.
So progressives have been silent because that is also part of the Democratic Party. So those of us who really are anti-war and anti-interventionists have been shown once again that we really have to be independent because neither party is going to represent us in this regard. And we have to speak out. You know, there should be U.S. troops anywhere. That would be the best outcome for the world.
Margaret Kimberly has a weekly column at blackagendareport.com under the title Freedom Rider. This week's column, When America Interfered in a Russian Election. Margaret, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.